As we told you yesterday, the Cubs' number 3 and 4 hitters were promoted to Double-A Tennessee. Brennan Davis, the number 2 prospect in the Cubs system, along with Chase Strump, a second baseman, who is the number 10 prospect in the Cubs system. Both debuted for Tennessee last night. I know Strump homered in his first time up as a Tennessee Smoky. So that Double-A lineup has a lot of high-end Cubs talent right now with Davis, Strump, Miguel Amaya, among others. So that's definitely a team to watch right now in the Cubs system. And the Cubs, without those two players, their offense looked a little different last night, as basically your 5 and 6 hitters moved up to the 3 and 4 spots. And on top of everything else, today, the number 11 prospect in the Cubs system, Cole Roederer, the center fielder, the 21-year-old out of California, he was placed on the injured list today, retroactive to May 29. So that is 3 high-end Cub prospects out of the South Bend lineup, two due to promotion to Double-A Tennessee, and then Roederer now on the injured list. So South Bend's lineup looks a whole lot different than it did on Sunday when they put up 12 runs on 18 base hits. Here's the good news, that for Chicago Cub fans, you can probably see what's happening right now as the Cubs are moving along guys quickly in the system. There's been a lot of changes this year. To be fair, Brennan Davis should have started at Double-A. He was hit by a pitch in spring training April the 22nd. That pushed back his timetable. That's why he actually started in South Bend and was with us for a week. He got the rust off, hit a couple of home runs, and now he's back to where he should be at Double-A. But to me, you look at what could be happening at Wrigley Field during the offseason, the moving on from Chris Bryant, Anthony Rizzo, Javier Baez, all of those free agents, and you start to see possible the moving around of the core within the Cubs organization, and guys like Brennan Davis are a part of that next core in the Cubs organization. So who knows, he could be in left field taking over for Jock Peterson, who signed just a 1-year deal with the Cubs during the offseason. So players are moving up the system quickly. There's a hole between Double-A and the majors right now. So this is really, really good news for Cub fans, as Chicago pushing some of their prospects through the system quickly, I think, in anticipation of possibly needing some new young reinforcements at the major league level if any of those guys depart in free agency. Baez, Rizzo, and of course Bryant. You would have to think Bryant of the three is the top leading candidate to be traded, but the way the Cubs are playing right now, how can you think about trading Chris Bryant, as the Cubs just took the lead on the Padres 3-1 at Wrigley Field in the bottom of the fifth inning, as Rizzo delivered a clutch 2-out, 2 RBI double off a tough Padres left-hander Hill. So here you go, Rizzo with the big clutch hit, and the Cubs, who lead the NL Central by a half a game over St. Louis, 2.5 over Milwaukee. Maybe we should all stop this trade talk until the Cubs cool off, because they're not showing any signs of cooling off. And how can you trade Chris Bryant when you're in first place? You can't do it, can you? I know for the future it makes sense, but you just can't do that. That just seems criminal. We'll see how things pan out over the next month with the deadline July 31st. We'll see where the Cubs stand maybe July 1st, and Mr. Hoyer will have a better idea of the direction he's going to go with this baseball team. But this team is red hot right now, dating back to May 1st, and showing no signs of slowing down at this time. Folks, it was a huge sports afternoon for news. This is not official from Duke University as of yet, but multiple reports, including the Associated Press, have the story that the winningest coach in Division I men's basketball history, Mike Krzyzewski, is going to announce his retirement. He will coach the 21-22 campaign, and then he will step aside after 42 years in charge of the Blue Devil program. And John Shire will take over. Former Duke player and a current assistant coach, was heavily involved in the Zion Williamson recruitment, which is kind of an interesting story in itself, since there's a lot of dark clouds around that particular situation. But let's focus on Coach K, someone that Mike Bray, of course, knows so well. The Notre Dame coach was an assistant coach at Duke before getting the job at Delaware and then coming to the University of Notre Dame. Krzyzewski, the all-time winningest coach in men's basketball history, is 74 years old, 1,907 career wins at Duke. He's already in the Naismith Basketball Hall of Fame. He has led Duke to 12 Final Fours. He has won 5 national championships. He's also picked up 15 conference titles and 12 ACC regular season titles. Going back to those 5 championships won by Coach K, he is number 2 all-time, only behind the legendary and former South Bend resident John Wooden, who won 10 national championships at UCLA. Duke hired Coach K back in 1980, a few years in. He almost got fired, got a second chance, got a contract extension, and now he has led Duke to the greatest run in their program history, one of the greatest runs of all time, the 5 national titles. He's won 97 NCAA tournament games, number 1 among all coaches, 126 weeks, number 1 in the Associated Press top 25 poll. So 5 seasons at Army, and when he is done, 42 years at Duke. Right now, 1,170 victories. He has had success coaching the U.S. men's national team to gold medal wins in 2008, 2012, and 2016. Now, Duke missed the NCAA tournament for the first time since 1995 this season. They've got a high-end recruiting class coming in. Now, that should not be a surprise. But Coach K will call it quits at the end of the year. I think he's done it in an interesting fashion. In 2010, he had an older, senior-laden team that won the national championship. You fast forward to 2015. He wins the title with a handful of one-and-dones. He has definitely went to the dark side in recent years, going with more of the one-and-dones. It did not pay off this year for Coach K, not making the NCAA tournament. But overall, he has adapted to college basketball. I think more changes are coming with the imaging coming to the forefront in college sports, more for coaches to deal with. Coach K has done it all at the age of 74. And again, according to various reports, including the Associated Press, soon Coach K will announce his retirement. He will coach this year. Then he will call it quits. And the coach in waiting is assistant coach John Shire, who played for Coach K at Duke and has been an assistant coach, heavily involved in recruiting. Apparently, they looked at some outside candidates, Tommy Amaker being one of those at Harvard, a former Duke player and assistant coach, but they have elected to stay in-house with John Shire. So, boy, you talk about Tobacco Road looking a whole lot different. Roy Williams leaves for Hubert Davis, and now Coach K apparently is going to step aside for John Shire. The Duke-North Carolina rivalry, it's still going to have the same passion, but it's going to be odd not seeing Roy and Coach K roaming the sidelines. And a tip of the cap to those two. They've had great respect for one another. It is a heated rivalry, but they have always been very gracious when they went toe-to-toe. And two of the great programs in college basketball going through some major changes at this time. Again, we're expecting Coach K to announce his retirement of coach this year and then hand it over to John Shire. We'll see what the Notre Dame basketball schedule looks like with Duke on it this year. But a legend in college basketball apparently is going to call it quits. Coach K, you know, you're a pretty good coach when you're known by just Coach K, not your full name. It is 420 at Sports Radio 96.1 WSBT. Will follow the progress of afternoon baseball. Cubs lead the Padres 3-1 in the sixth inning. The White Sox and Indians were rained out in Cleveland. That game will be made up as part of a day-night doubleheader in Cleveland on September the 23rd. Sean's going to join me for the next segment. We have our four-down segment on the way, so please stick around for that. We're going to talk some Notre Dame football recruiting today. Mike Singer, the recruiting insider for Blue and Gold Illustrated, blueandgold.com. He will join the program at 5:40 in just about an hour and 20 minutes, as apparently the transfer candidate from Tulsa, the cornerback, reportedly is on campus today taking a look at the University of Notre Dame. That kind of kickstarts 15 months, this campus being idle, visitors coming back to this great campus, a great asset for this Notre Dame football program. That and more all coming up as we're on the air until 6:40 tonight, when it's Cub baseball taking on Lansing at 6:45. So stick around, more to come. Darren Pritchett with you. Sean joins me next on Sports Radio 96.1 WSBT, and we are streaming currently on WSBTRadio.com.
Connect with us on Facebook and Twitter. Just look for WSBT Radio, 96.1 FM, WSBT.
.426 on your home of the Fighting Irish, Sports Radio 96.1 WSBT. Darren Pritchett with you. Sean will join me in just a couple of moments. Plenty to get to on our program tonight. As I mentioned, we've got Notre Dame football recruiting talk to get to with Mike Singer coming up at 5:40 in just about an hour and 10 minutes here on WSBT Radio. We have a couple of baseball segments today. Also, we're going to take a look at that South Bend Baseball Regional. Notre Dame hosting a regional for the first time in 15 years. They get Connecticut, Michigan, and Central Michigan as the three teams joining them in this four-team regional. It is double elimination. So Sean and I in the 5 o'clock hour, we'll have a little March Madness fun. We'll take a look at that double elimination bracket and try to figure out how it's all going to play out at X Stadium. Again, full capacity at X Stadium for the baseball regional. Notre Dame is opening up their campus to all the baseball fans in our area and from the teams are going to be coming here to take part in this regional. So terrific news to report, full capacity. And Link Jarrett, the Notre Dame baseball coach, is going to be meeting the media tomorrow, and we will bring you some of his comments on tomorrow's program as his team gets set to take on Central Michigan on Friday. I think I just heard the breathing of Mr. Sean Sires. I know, yes. You've been scrambling.
That is the breathing.
Well, I think people have heard us talk about this, but right now we are transitioning to a brand new building. And when you transition to a new building and technology is involved, sometimes we have to make adjustments.
That's right.
On the fly. And you just made the ultimate adjustment on the fly. So you can now take a deep breath.
Yes.
And relax, and we'll get the program rolling here. We can talk more about Coach K in a little bit and some other topics that have popped up today. But we've got our four-down segment ready to go, so what the heck. We'll just kind of weave our way into that conversation. And our first down question today centers around college football. The University of Florida has given football coach Dan Mullen a raise and an extension through 2026. Now, it's going to be tough for Mullen to lead Florida to an SEC championship because that Nick Saban guy is still in charge of Alabama. So let's take Nick Saban out of the equation. Okay. Nick Saban and Alabama no longer exists. So if you had to hire one current SEC football coach, not named Nick Saban, who would you choose?
There are a lot of interesting names in the SEC right now, or at least big names, or at least familiar names, maybe. Some of them bigger than others. But, I mean, you got Lane Kiffin at Ole Miss, Mike Leach at Mississippi State. I don't think I'd want the Pirate around, and I wouldn't touch Lane Kiffin if I was wearing a hazmat suit.
The Pirate.
Yeah, you know, Mike Leach, the old Pirate. Remember that?
His
swashbuckling and all that.
Yeah, that's
stuff
right.
From his Texas Tech days. Yeah. I mean, you got Mullen. He hasn't won anything yet. Kirby Smart at Georgia, as good as he's been, I mean, you know, he hasn't really won anything yet either. And I do kind of wonder maybe if he's reached his peak already at Georgia. Mark Stoops at Kentucky. A lot of people like him.
Yeah, Ed Orgeron. Gets a lot out of nothing there.
Yeah, that's true, at Kentucky. Ed Orgeron, You know, this is a pretty important year for him. On down the bayou at LSU, go Tigers.
I should try my raspy voice now. I can probably do Ed a little better now
right
here.
Up your alley.
There you go. Go Tigers.
That's right. So, I mean, I think I'd have to go with Jimbo Fisher from Texas A&M. Won a national championship at Florida State. You know, the last time they were legit was when he was there. He got him to another playoff. He took the big paycheck, went to College Station, kind of backed himself into a corner a little bit by the fact that he's got to play in the same division
Ouch.
As Saban. You know, I mean, it's like, oh, I'm going to go to the SEC and Texas A&M, and I've got Alabama in my same division every year. They were just outside the playoffs, though, last year. Could be back in that picture this year. So I think that I would go with Jimbo.
As you make that choice, do you notice the dirt under your fingernails? There's a little grease on your hands. Do you get that sense a little bit?
Yeah, that's
with
true.
With Jimbo?
That's true.
Yeah, he probably,
maybe
how
so.
Do I say it? He's probably creative in his recruiting, as many are.
Likely.
Okay. He was in consideration for me. He's won a title, so it's awfully hard not to pick him. I actually was doing a little research and came across, this is a 2021 article, and they ranked all the coaches in the SEC. And I think Clark Lee was 12th going into his first year at Vanderbilt.
And I left him off, yeah.
Coach Orgeron was 9th on the list. The new Auburn coach is ahead of him.
No kidding.
And I think it just feels like the success of that LSU team, my goodness, you hate to not give him credit, but the offensive and defensive coordinators that he had and the schemes they formulated, I'm not sure how much coaching Ed does. He kind of always seems like the cheerleader in the group. Again, right. I don't want to say he doesn't do anything, but with a little talent gone and his two coordinators gone, boy, things changed in an awfully big hurry. I was stunned to see him 9th. I mean, Lane Kiffin and Mike Leach were ahead of him. Would you take Eddie O before Leach and Kiffin?
Absolutely. Right now. I mean, you can obviously make the argument with Leach that he has done more with less over the course of his career at both Texas Tech and Washington State. But at the end of the day, what's he won? You know, he's still – whether he's at smaller programs or not, he's still been in Power 5 conferences. What's he won when it's all said and done?
I tell you, right now in college football, if you're not Alabama, Clemson, Ohio State, Notre Dame, Oklahoma, nobody's done much because that's the only teams that get to the playoffs, it seems.
Yeah.
Like.
Yeah.
It's hard to break through right now. Well, I should probably put Georgia in there as well, to be fair to them. It's not like they've been there 3 or 4 times, but at least, well – it felt like they had Alabama beating the title game, and then that Georgia thing happened like it's happened to the Falcons and the Braves.
Yep.
On down the line. I mean, the True. Poor Hawks fans are panicking up 3-1. Is it going to happen again? I mean, what an awful feeling that is. So I guess I never did answer the question. I'll say
yeah.
this. Yeah, we got going on a different route there. Jimbo is my second choice. I almost picked him, probably should have picked him. I'm going to put an asterisk next to my choice. I'm going to take Kirby Smart of Georgia, but he's not in charge of calling fake punts. And I'm going to get him a really good offensive coordinator, and I might take him off defensive coordinator and let him just be head coach because I think he can recruit as well as anybody.
Sure.
He's recruiting well, but – there have just been some decisions that make you a little nervous. So I'm going to bank on a guy that can recruit to be the basis and the foundation of my football team and hope he gets it done. Now, Jimbo can recruit very well too, but Jimbo just to me is that one gunslinger in the West you just don't trust at the poker table. So
I can see that. I can
just
see that.
Makes me a little nervous. And my goodness, he left Florida State like it was nothing. You would have thought that would have been the ultimate job for a lot of people, but Jimbo took the paycheck. College Station, you know what? Good for him. That's what makes America great.
Yep. I just don't know how many of those coaches you can trust in the SEC,
you know,
with when it comes to that stuff. Yeah, I don't know.
It's hard to imagine Clark Lee doing that.
No, true. Very different. He's at the only private school though in the conference. It'll be different down there.
Yeah.
That's why that's a tough place.
All right, let's go to second down. 99 days from tonight, the NFL season begins with the Dallas Cowboys visiting the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. So I'm going to put together three parlay-type questions as we look ahead to that first NFL game in 99 days. So the Buccaneers are still favored by 6.5 over the Cowboys. Total points in the game, 51.5. And the third question is just who's going to have more passing yards, Dak or the GOAT? So feel free, go 1 through 3 there, your three choices.
So the 6.5, as you said, Tampa Bay minus 6.5. I like Dallas getting those points. As bad as their defense was last year, before Dak Prescott broke his ankle, they would have covered that number in 3 of his 5 games. So they still played it relatively close, and the other two weren't that far off. So I'll take the Cowboys getting those 6.5.
Okay.
The 51.5, that's a tough number because Tampa's defense, big strength last year, season opener in prime time. What's Dallas going to be able to score against them? It's not like they were an impenetrable fortress last year. So I think Dallas should still be able to score. You know, is what's Dallas's defense going to be like? I'm still going to take the over. I'm going to go over 51.5. And then who's going to have more passing yards, Prescott or Brady? Prescott threw for over 400 yards in 3 of his 5 starts last year before the injury. So, I mean, he was airing it out. Now, granted, some of that was due to the fact that, you know, the defense was so bad, so they had to air it out a little more, playing catch-up and that kind of thing. But, you know, and now he's got to go up against that Tampa defense. I still think he'll have more passing yards, though, than Brady in the matchup.
All right, so you're going Cowboys plus 6.5, over 51.5 points, and Dak with more passing yards than the GOAT.
You got it.
Okay, I am going to go ahead and take Tampa Bay minus the 6.5 points. I just don't trust the Cowboys' defense until I have a reason to trust their defense. If they would have gotten a high-end corner in the first round, I would have been a little more excited, but I just don't know about the matchups on the outside in this game from a Cowboys standpoint. So I'm going to ride the world champs at home in that first game. Total points, 51.5. I agree with you. I think it's going to be a high-scoring game. I see the Buccaneers getting into the 30s. I would think the Cowboys are at least going to get into the 20s. So I love that. In fact, if it was like 54.5, I still would like the over in that matchup. Most passing yards, well, if the game's going to be 30-something to 20-something, that means Brady's going to have some touchdown passes. But that probably also means, Sean, that Dak is going to have to throw a lot in the second half to try to bring the Cowboys back down there at the big pirate ship. So you brought up some good points about last year when Dak was healthy. He was throwing for 3 digits quite often. So I'm going to go ahead and take Mr. Prescott to have more passing yards than Mr. Brady. All right, we'll have a little more betting coming up in a second. But first, third down. I was looking at the Major League Baseball stats today, and something really popped out. The young guys are right now leading the pack in home runs. You look at the Braves, Ronald Acuna, and the Blue Jays, Vladimir Guerrero Jr. They lead the majors in home runs with 17. So the question is this. Acuna is 23 years old. Guerrero is 22 years old. If you could pick one of these two to start your franchise with, who do you go with? Can't go wrong.
I tell you what. No, you're absolutely right. You can't. I think that I would go with Acuna, though. As you said, he's only 23, but he has already been in the big leagues for essentially, three full seasons? Or for the most part, three full seasons. He's got a .925 career OPS. He already has a 37 stolen base season, 41 home runs in that same season. He's a little bit more versatile, a little bit more, you know, athletic. You know, you can play him at any of the three outfield positions. With, you know, with Guerrero, not quite the versatility that you have. You know, again, you can't go wrong. I think Guerrero, you're going to see him continue to spike offensively. But I would go with Acuña, though.
I'm going to go with Acuña for a couple of reasons. Now, I love to watch Vlad Jr. hit. He is just
absolutely
powerful. And kind of like his dad, he can hit any pitch anywhere. But I like Acuña for a couple of reasons. He is more athletic. You worry about Vlad Jr. as he gets older, adding more weight to that frame. He's lost some this year, and apparently that's one of the big reasons why he's having great success. But you worry about those pounds coming back on. Acuña, I think, is going to stay
right.
fit, so he is going to stay more athletic for a longer period of time. I like the stolen base
Absolutely.
Threat. With Acuña to go along with the power and the average. And the third reason, and maybe the most important, is Guerrero's kind of set at first base or DH. They tried him at third base, just didn't work out. They've got him at first base now. Sean Acuña is a guy that's going to be in the outfield for a long time. He's got a great arm, great defensively. So athleticism, speed, and the ability to play a more prime position are the three reasons why I go with Acuña over Vlad Jr. And we wrap up four downs with another wagering question. Now, I went 1-1 yesterday on my two selections, so I'll see if I can do a little better today. All right, so you're in charge of FanDuel. I've got the BetMGM account. So two picks that you are liking tonight. I really like the Cubs today, but I didn't want to take that while the game was going on. So I'll go ahead and yield the floor to you. And what do you like at FanDuel today?
So we got Twins Orioles tonight. The over-under is 9.5 runs. I like the over at -118. A twin starter, Randy Dobnak, has an 8.74 ERA. He's allowed 5-plus runs three times this year. Orioles starter Matt Harvey, not quite the Dark Knight anymore. A 6.84 earned run average. He's given up at least four straight starts. So over 9.5 runs in that Twins-Orioles matchup. I like that a lot.
Okay. Is Mancini back? I have not noticed.
My other game, I have not either.
I have to look.
Now that you mention it, I'll have to check that here in a little bit. Yeah. My other game, I'm going to go to the NBA playoffs for this next one. And this is a game time wager. You need to find, you know, what the odds are at game time and lock it in, because Joel Embiid still listed as doubtful. There's a chance that he's back tonight. It's the Wizards against the Philadelphia 76ers in game 5 of their first round series. 76ers are 39-12 with Embiid this season, 10-11 without him. So place your bet based on whether or not Embiid is playing. If he is playing, I would lay it on the 76ers. If he is not, then go with the Washington Wizards.
Yeah, the reports are he's out. So that means we should go.
The last I saw it was still doubtful, but that may have changed since.
Okay.
So
interesting. So if he does not play.
I haven't looked at that in a while because I've been running around, as you know.
Yeah. Yes. If he doesn't play, so we go with the Wizards then. Okay. I like that.
Correct.
I like that. Okay.
Correct.
All right. So with my BetMGM friends, here are my two. I'm going to stick with baseball. So I saw this guy pitch for the Bowling Green Hot Rods several times against the South Bend Cubs. So I've got a little man crush on him from watching him pitch. But Shane McClanahan is the starting pitcher for the Tampa Bay Rays at Yankee Stadium against the New York Yankees tonight. My wager is going to be this. I am going to take the Rays in the first five innings. So after the first five innings, what's the score? That's the deciding factor. I'm going to say the Rays are going to be winning after five innings, and that is +110. So if I bet five, I win $550 for a total of $1,050 back. Now, McClanahan has gone at least five innings in each of his last three starts. his last two starts, 10 innings, giving up just one earned run. So he has pitched well in his last two starts. The Yankees have not seen him, and I think that's important for the debate of this bet. He is a guy that is pretty good at inducing ground balls, 28 ground ball outs in 23 innings so far this year. I like that going to Yankee Stadium where you can sneak the ball out down the lines rather easily. Yeah. I think a lot of times it's tough when you see a guy for the first time. So I'm basing this on McClanahan only going through the lineup twice through five innings. You look at the Yankees against lefties, they're hitting 239 with only a 307 on base. They're only 16-12 at home this year, which isn't great considering how much they have in their lineup. And the Rays are 8-2 in their last 10. And, Sean, they're 20-8 on the road this year. So I will take the Rays in the first five innings plus 110 at the Yankees, basing on McClanahan getting the job done. And Jordan Montgomery starting for the Yankees. I mean, it's not like he's Whitey Ford. So I'm going to take my chances
exactly.
there. I really like the fact the Rays are the underdog. I think that's a good underdog play. We'll see how it plays out.
I think so.
Okay. My second bet MGM tonight. This might be a little bit of a risk. I'm going with another underdog. I've seen some outlets say you definitely should go with the Braves tonight. So, okay, I'll be the knucklehead that goes the other way. I've got the Nationals on the money line as a big underdog at plus 135 at the Braves. So if I bet five, I bring home 675 for a total of 1175. It's John Lester versus Drew Smyly. It is not Greg Maddux versus Steven Strasburg. This is two guys, two lefties who have had up and down success this year. Braves hitters against Lester are hitting 189 with a 214 on base and a slugging percentage of a miserable 292. Now, two guys have hit Lester. Acuna's 3-for-9. Ozzie Albies is 7-for-9. You take away those two, Sean, the rest of the lineup is 11-for-77 against Lester. That's not good. Smyly has allowed 10 earned runs over his last 11 innings pitched. So I'm going to go with the old crusty veteran, John Lester, to beat Drew Smyly, who actually was on a rehab assignment with the South Bend Cubs a couple of years ago. This is kind of an ugly game, but I'm going to go with two underdogs with my bets. I'll take the Nationals at plus 135 and the Rays over the first five innings at plus 110. So if you win one of the two, you come out a little ahead. You just got to win one of the two. That's the problem.
I like both of those.
Okay, that is going to do it for our four-down segment. Sports be brought to you by Budweiser. Locally distributed by United Beverage Company of South Bend. Baseball fans, this Bud's for you. The Food Bank of Northern Indiana. Hunger is a story we can end. Find out how at feedindiana.org. And Tim Ground State Farm Insurance. You need life insurance today. Tomorrow will be too late. Protect your family by calling Tim at 232-9981. 81. Well, there's never been a better time to find out why. BetMGM is the king of sportsbooks. Right now, new customers have a chance to win $100 in free bets when they place a $1 moneyline wager on any NBA playoff game. If either team hits a three-pointer in the game, you'll win $100 regardless of your bet's outcome. Just use the bonus code DARIN100, DARIN100, when you make your first bet to take advantage of this offer. Get ready to turn the playoffs into payoffs. Sign up now and discover BetMGM's daily promotions, boosted odds specials, and much more. Download the app or go to BetMGM.com and use the bonus code DARIN100, DARIN100, to win $100 in free bets if either team hits a three in any NBA playoff game. Bet with confidence at BetMGM. New customer offer, paid in free bets. Visit BetMGM.com for terms and conditions. Indiana only. Must be 21 years or older to wager. If you or someone you know has a gambling problem and wants help, call 1-800-9-WITH-IT. We're back in a moment. 449 at WSBT. It is 453 on this Wednesday evening. The Chicago Cubs looks like they are en route to another victory this afternoon at home. They have a 3-1 lead on the Padres in the bottom of the seventh inning, and Alcantara just picked up a triple on a bad bounce over first baseman Eric Hosmer's head into the right field corner, and that is a leadoff triple for Alcantara and the Cubs in the bottom of the seventh inning. And just going back to April 26th, this is when the Chicago Cubs alternate site was at Four Winds Field, home of the South Bend Cubs. I called a game between the Cubs and the White Sox, again, April 26th, and it was on southbendcubs.com. But it's amazing, the lineup that day for the Cubs alternate site team, how they have truly impacted the Cubs roster over the last week. So, Sean, let me go through this. Now, a couple of these names won't matter, but Ian Miller led off. Then it was Andrew Romine, the second baseman. The number three hitter that day was Rafael Ortega, who has been getting at-bats in this series against San Diego with Jason Hayward down. So Ortega hit third that day. Hitting cleanup, P.J. Higgins, who has been called up by the Cubs for a couple of weeks. I know he's still looking for that first base hit. He is starting today for the Cubs. The number five hitter, Nick Martini. He drew a walk as a pinch hitter in today's game against San Diego. He's been up for a while. Patrick Wisdom hit sixth, who has three home runs over the last two games for the Cubs. Then you got Trent Giambrone hitting seventh, Jose Lobatone hitting eighth, and the number nine hitter just got the triple in the bottom of the seventh inning and had two hits last night. That is Sergio Alcantara. So anybody thinks that alternate site thing was a waste of time, those players got ready. They prepared for the season every day, waiting for that opportunity to help out the big club. Tommy Nance was in the alternate site. I don't know if he pitched that day or not. Let me look. He did not pitch. Oh, yes, he did. He actually did pitch that day for the Cubs. So Tommy Nance pitched on April the 26th as well. I also did a game on the 17th that he pitched. So it's pretty remarkable. All of that time put in by those alternate site players. Five guys in the lineup in that last alternate site game against the White Sox are impacting the Cubs roster. I don't think anybody thought that at the time, but with the rash of injuries the Cubs are going through with Hayward and Bodie and Mariznick, all these guys have come through and they have done some really good things, and you got to give them a lot of credit for this great run the Cubs continue to be on right now.
No, absolutely. I mean, it's a great point. You know, like when you look at some of these guys who have been brought up, whether it's Alcantara or Patrick Wisdom and some of these guys, it's not just that they're doing it with the guys who are on the roster. All of a sudden, they've had the injuries to guys like Bodie and Rizzo was out for a little bit.
Yeah,
and
that's
these
right.
guys have really stepped up and helped carry him through this. And, I just can't say enough about their bullpen. I continue to be amazed by what they're doing. But, I mean, it's a great point, that alternate site was used for development, and guys who are there now are making big contributions mm-hmm. for the Cubs.
Padres have had a couple of miscues on the infield. They just had a run scored in the bottom of the seventh. Cubs lead 4-1 over the San Diego Padres. We'll take a timeout, business break, and also a SportsCenter update on the way. Then we'll take a look at the Notre Dame Baseball Regional, which starts on Friday. And we still have Mike Singer in the on-deck circle from Blue and Gold Illustrated, the recruiting insider. We'll talk Notre Dame football recruiting, including the first visitor to Notre Dame's campus. All coming up, 4:57 at WSBT South Bend. South Bend Cubs baseball later tonight, 6:45, Barnabees of Mishawaka pregame coverage, 7:05 first pitch, Chicago Cubs 2019 first-round pick Ryan Jensen takes the mound for a fifth time this year for South Bend. He'll be on the bump as we get our coverage underway tonight at 7:05 here on Sports Radio 96.1 WSBT. Before we get to a little Notre Dame baseball talk, we started the show discussing the news of the day. And according to the Associated Press and other outlets, very soon the official announcement will be made. And one of the great coaches in college basketball history is going to retire. 74-year-old Duke head coach Mike Krzyzewski reportedly will coach one more year, the upcoming 2021-22 campaign, and then he will retire. John Shire, who played for Duke, his assistant coach the last few years, heavily involved in recruiting, will be the coach in waiting, and he will take over for the 2022-23 campaign. This is almost kind of like when Gene Cady stepped aside. Matt Painter was there waiting to take over the helm. And, boy, has he done great things with the Boilermaker program. So Duke and Carolina, that great rivalry will continue to be great. But no Roy Williams. He is retired. Hubert Davis took over for Roy. And now we're going to see Coach K step aside, and it will be John Shire taking over. Personally, do I like Duke? No. I probably don't like them because they're really good. They're really annoying. They've had the Grayson Allens, those type of players who just annoy the heck out of you. It's annoying to watch Coach K whine throughout a basketball game against your favorite team, and the calls always seem to go their way and key moments in ball games. So, yeah, there's a lot of reasons why probably a lot of us don't like Duke. Those are some of the reasons why they frustrate the heck out of me. And recently with the whole Zion Williamson recruitment, everything just seems a little fishy there. But, I mean, across the country with AU basketball, there's nothing crystal clean about what's going on with AU recruiting. But with all that being said, he is one of the great coaches of all time. Nearly got fired at Duke early on, kept his job. The rest is history. Over 1,000 wins, the 5 national titles. Truly one of the greatest coaches of all time. Is he annoying? Yeah, I get frustrated. His team get a lot of calls and a lot of key moments, but he must be an awfully good debater with the officials to gain those advantages for his basketball team.
Yeah, I mean, I agree with everything you said. I've never been a fan of the program or anything, but you cannot argue with the results that he's had, winning 5 national championships and going to the Final Four 12 times overall. And, you know, like it started in 1986, and it's been 6 years. That's kind of like when you think about it, it has been a little bit since they've been to another Final Four. 2015 was their last one. But, I mean, still, when you look at it, just that right there, 86 and 2015, that's 29 years apart right there. And, you know, they weren't quite as good last year. But, I mean, at the same time, he's already in the Hall of Fame. He's a great coach. He's done something right. He has adapted just yes, like the other Blue Bloods have, you know, with the times. And he has done it better than anybody else in the time that he's been in the game.
2010 had an old team that won the title. 2015 had the young pups and won a title. You know, I'm not a big fan of the one-and-done thing. It's not against the rules. Kentucky, except for this year, it's worked out pretty well for them. You know, Duke has had some success with it. So he has adapted to the times, and you give him credit for that. But that is the ultimate tough shoes to fill. Good luck to John Shire. It is never fun to be the next guy to take over for a legend. And it's going to be a handful, but there is such a foundation within that program. I'm sure there's still going to be a lot of kids that are going to want to play for Duke. I don't think that's going to change anytime soon. But if we want to make this dynasty crumble, everybody in the ACC needs to play very well against Duke. Try to put some doubt in these recruits across the country that maybe Duke isn't the place to go with Coach K there. So I think for everybody in the ACC wanting Duke to be knocked down a peg or two, next couple of years be awfully nice to handle Duke a little bit, just to put a little doubt in the minds of these kids that, well, maybe Duke was all about Coach K, and maybe it's not going to be the same program. That sure wouldn't hurt. Let's give that a shot.
Yeah.
Gosh, I'm mean. I mean. That's all right.
Hey,
Tobacco Road.
Sometimes the truth hurts, right?
I mean, Tobacco Road, they've had the spoils for a long time. Let's pass it around just a little bit. All right, it is 5:14 at WSBT. Sean and Darren with you. We're excited to have regional baseball action coming back to the University of Notre Dame for the first time in 15 years. The South Bend Regional will get started on Friday. It is a four-team regional, double elimination. The number one seed is Notre Dame, the number 10 overall seed in the country. The Connecticut Huskies out of the Big East are the number two seed. The three seed out of the Big Ten Conference, the Michigan Wolverine and the Wolverine, excuse me, and out of the MAC, they had a great year in the MAC, 40 wins overall. Chippewas from Central Michigan are the four seed. So Notre Dame has a great opportunity here. If they win this regional, they would line up at the very least to go to Mississippi State, the number seven overall seed for the Super Regional. Of course, there's an upset along the way that helps Notre Dame's chances to host a Super Regional, which would be awfully cool. When Coach Maneri was here, did they ever host a Super Regional? I don't think they ever did they? That's strange.
The only Super Regional they ever went to was
Florida
State. 2002 when they ended up going to Omaha. And that's kind of what I was going to, you know, I mentioned this yesterday, the fact that, like, winning your first two games is important because it, you know, ultimately conserves pitching and all that stuff.
Right.
And the only time Notre Dame even won the first two games of a regional was that same year, that, you know, in 2002. They ended up going 3-0 at that regional and then went to Tallahassee, won the Super Regional. That's the only time they ever won their first two games. They always, you know, lost one of those first two games, and that puts you in the loser's bracket and that double elimination trying to come back through. So, I mean, that's that kind of shows, not that everyone rides on, but overcome, you know, losing one of those first two and still end up winning a regional. But it puts you in so much better position if you win those first two games, because then you've got the chance. You know, then if you win that third game, you win the whole thing. If you lose that third game, you will have lost to a team that's already lost a game, so that forces a fourth game. But four games would be the most you would have to play if you win those first two games. So it's really important, you know, for your pitching for the weekend to win those first two games.
Link Jarrett, the head coach of Notre Dame baseball, will meet the media tomorrow. I'm not sure if he's going to announce a starting pitcher or not for the Central Michigan game, but we will bring you some of the highlights of his comments on tomorrow's program. So let's try to do what we do for the NCAA tournament. And boy, do we do it so well, right? It's so easy to pick March Madness. Let's try to figure out how this bracket will unfold in the South Bend Regional, again, with Notre Dame, UConn, Michigan, and Central Michigan, the four teams involved in this double elimination tournament. So the opening game of the tournament is Friday at 1 o'clock, the four seed Central Michigan taking on the top seed Notre Dame. I wish we knew who Notre Dame's starter was. I'm betting they don't go Bertrand here.
Yeah.
I think to win this particular regional, to give yourself the best chance, I think Bertrand has to be saved for later on. I think you have to roll the dice, Sean. You have to trust the other parts of your team. And even though Bertrand struggled in his last start against Virginia, that's the guy you're going to bank on to bring home the bacon later on in this regional. Is that the way you look at it?
No, absolutely. And, you know, it's like that's, you know, we kind of touched on it yesterday, the strategy of being the number one seed against the four, because there's that automatic assumption, well, you should be a lot better. But I think that it makes sense to stick with Mercer and then have Bertrand for the Saturday game for your second game against either Michigan or Connecticut. Mercer had a nice outing against Virginia Tech at the ACC tournament last week. Five shutout innings against Virginia Tech. You know, the other side of that is, who are they going to face? Because Central Michigan, it looks like, has this power arm with Andrew Taylor. You know, they've got two good – each of these four teams has two really good pitchers. Taylor has 120 strikeouts in 89 and a third innings and five complete games for Central Michigan this season. So, again, we don't know who it's going to be, but it's going to be – you know, it's going to be a tough matchup. I think no matter what, I don't think Central Michigan's going to be a pushover just because, it's Central Michigan and it's a MAC team. So there's a lot that goes into that decision that Link Jarrett's going to have to make, you know, in terms of who he's going to start. But I tend to agree with what you're saying. I would probably go with Mercer.
Okay. With that being said, let's just pretend Mercer is the starter then. So game number one, Friday at 1, Central Michigan with that power arm. I did look up his numbers. Pretty impressive. Taking on Notre Dame, Who do you like?
I've got to go with Notre Dame because I like their offensive approach. You know, there's more contact. They get guys on base, and they're able to kind of put things in motion, hit and run, whatever it happens to be. They find different ways to score runs. I think that, you know, again, I don't think Central Michigan's going to be a pushover just because of the pitcher that they're going to have to face, whether it's Patty or Taylor. But I like Notre Dame to be able to do enough to pull that one out.
I agree with you on that. The offense has been awfully consistent throughout the year. They have figured out ways to come back and win ball games. They can do as good a job as anybody playing small ball, not needing the home run ball from a guy like Cavadas. So I think Notre Dame overcomes that really good Central Michigan starter, picks up the win, drops Central Michigan to the loser's bracket. Then Friday at 7 o'clock, it is the 2-seed Connecticut versus the 3-seed Michigan.
And I tell you what, again, both of these teams have similar power arms. You have Ben Kasperius for UConn, 123 strikeouts in 88 innings. For Michigan, it is Steve Hajar, I think is how you say his name, H-A, two J's and an A-R, 101 strikeouts in 75 and two-thirds. So I think we're going to see a really good pitching matchup there. UConn has four different guys, three guys with 11 home runs, Kyler Fedko, 12 home runs and a 411 batting average.
Wow.
I'm going to take UConn to win this game. I don't think UConn's going to be a pushover. This is their seventh NCAA appearance since 2010. You know, so even though they kind of come from the Northeast, you know, which you don't associate with great college baseball, I'm going to take UConn to beat Michigan, who just went to the College World Series 2 years ago.
See, that's why this is tricky, because you look at UConn as a two. They're from the Big East. They're from the Northeast. They never have good teams in the Northeast. So this just seems too easy to have Connecticut as the two seed in this particular regional. But again, Mike Rooney, the former Notre Dame player, analyst for ESPN, called this one of the toughest regionals in the country. On paper, I'm kind of like, really? But you read off some of the data on this UConn team, and they might be that sneaky good number two seed in this particular bracket. I'm going to follow your lead. Let's go with UConn over Michigan. So that moves us to Saturday, and the losers play at noon. It'll be Central Michigan taking on Michigan.
Man, and this is, you know, again, I think it's going to be another tough matchup, because let's say it's Jordan Patty pitching for Central Michigan. He's got a 2.58 ERA, and if it's Cameron Weston for Michigan, he's got a 2.4 ERA. I will take, again, I think this is going to be another closely contested game, but I'll take the Wolverines to beat the Chippewas in this one.
Okay, so we'll move Michigan along in the loser's bracket. So then Saturday at 6 o'clock at X Stadium, it is the vitally important winner's bracket matchup. The winner moves on basically to the championship round of this regional, and it is the top two seeds scoring off Notre Dame and UConn. So does the depth of UConn's pitching staff scare you at all?
Well, I mean, they've got, like I said, all four of these teams have good 1-2 punches. Whether it's Kasperius with his 123 strikeouts or Austin Peterson, their other guy with a 2.65 ERA and a 7-1 record, they'll still, you know, Notre Dame's going to see a tough pitcher on the mound. And, you know, we would, as we said, we think that it would be John Bertrand for Notre Dame. And again, UConn's got some pop. But, you know, I think Notre Dame regroups after kind of getting knocked around by Virginia in the ACC tournament last week. Bertrand gave up those three home runs in the second inning to the Cavaliers. I think that he puts that behind him. And the best team in the ACC, Notre Dame, beats the top team from their old conference, the Big East, and moves on yeah. into the winner's bracket.
Okay, which takes us to Sunday. And the noon game is going to be the Michigan-UConn game. These are the two teams battling to face Notre Dame in the championship round of this regional. So these two met on Friday, and they meet one more time on Saturday to decide who moves on and who goes home.
Yeah, and what's tough about the, you know, like looking at some of these numbers, because they both have solid enough bullpens. I think UConn's is a little deeper. Like, Michigan played a Big Ten-only schedule, whereas UConn went out and they played some teams this year, you know, in non-conference games. Like, they played Texas Tech, and, you know, they played some solid competition, and when you look at their numbers, they still look good as well, you know, because, again, we're talking about the loser's bracket now, so it's going to test your bullpens a little bit more. So I like UConn to win again against the Wolverines and eliminate Michigan.
Okay, very good. I'm going to follow your lead on that. And that takes us to Sunday at 6 o'clock. UConn comes back to take on Notre Dame. UConn has to win this game and then another game on Monday to advance to the Super Regional. Notre Dame, all they have to do is win this game or that extra game on Monday. Of course, they'd like to get it done as quick as possible. So, Sunday at 6 o'clock, it'll be Notre Dame playing their third game, while Connecticut will be playing their fourth game of the tournament. Always something to keep in mind when we talk about pitching depth.
Yeah, that's exactly right. And, like, if things go to script, which they seldom ever do once you start talking about NCAA baseball, but if things go to script, we were talking about this yesterday, you've got Bertrand typically pitching Saturday, and you expect him in his start to preserve the bullpen to give you a full arsenal for, you know, potentially for Sunday in that championship game. And and if that is the case, if things go, you know, the way that we think they will, then I really like Notre Dame in that situation. So, you know, again, I think UConn's got a decent enough bullpen led by Caleb Worster, who's got 9 saves and a 1.64 ERA, and he's a strikeout pitcher as well. But I like Notre Dame if UConn is going into game number 4 at that point.
I think there's a regional as South Carolina is the 2 and Virginia is the 3.
Yeah.
That's – I kind of like Notre Dame's draw. Even though Mike has talked about the depth of this regional, I still think they've got a pretty good draw, pretty good opportunity. And like you, I think they're going to win 3 straight. I really do. I like the way they field the baseball. They take the extra base. They continue to put pressure on the opposition. And I like the team that doesn't necessarily rely on the home run ball. Defense and pitching can take you a long way, and this defense has been just so good throughout the year. Hard to imagine it's going to crumble at this moment. I mean, they're on field turf. There's no reason why you shouldn't grab every ground ball on field turf, to be perfectly honest with you, even though I know sometimes that ball can pick up some steam on the turf. I think Notre Dame has an awesome opportunity. Some of the other possible draws we saw leading up to the tournament looked a little more scary than I think this regional ended up being. So we will both take Notre Dame to move on to the Super Regional. Again, tickets are available right now. UND.com has all the ticket information. There is going to be no local radio for Notre Dame baseball coverage, unfortunately. So the best opportunities, go out to the game. There's probably going to be some ESPN3 opportunities, but we wish Link Jarrett and the Irish well, and we will hear from Link during his media Zoom call tomorrow. Maybe we'll find out who starts for the Irish against Central Michigan. Sports Beat brought to you by Budweiser, locally distributed by United Beverage Company of South Bend. Baseball fans, this Bud's for you. The Food Bank of Northern Indiana. Hunger is a story we can end. Find out how at feedindiana.org. And Tim Growl State Farm Insurance. You need life insurance today. Tomorrow will be too late. Protect your family by calling Tim at 232-9981. We've got the My 5 question of the day next. Then Mike Singer talks Notre Dame recruiting on Budweiser's Weekday Sports Beat from Sports Radio 96.1 WSBT.
One question, 5 answers. This is the My 5 question of the day on Michiana's sports leader, 96.1 FM WSBT.
Sean and Darren with you on Budweiser's Weekday Sports Beat at 5:33. So, yesterday, Irish fans got pretty worked up over an ESPN Plus article that laid out how the Irish could be a 7-5 football team in 2021. So, if that actually became reality, Sean, what do you think are the top five reasons that would cause such a record in 2021? We'll start with number five.
Yeah, and to start with, then we think. And, you know, if Notre Dame ends up going 7-5, which I don't think will happen, that probably means they lose to USC, North Carolina. Your pick, two of these three, Virginia Tech, Cincinnati, Florida State. I just don't see it. But, again, if it does happen, those teams are going to have to be considerably better than we think they're going to be for Notre Dame to lose five.
We move along to answer number four.
From the Notre Dame perspective, the wide receivers, you know, the guys we think are going to be the top three, Kevin Austin, Braden Lindsay, Avery Davis, they combined for 33 catches last year. So now, you know, a big part of that was injuries to a couple of those guys, but that has to be factored into this as well. I still think if Javon McKinley can lead Notre Dame with 42 catches and 717 yards, they'll find a way with this group. But if they don't, it'll be a long year.
Mm-hmm. So ESPN Plus had an article that states Notre Dame could go 7-5 this year. If that actually happened, what would be the top five reasons for such a record? We move along to answer number three.
Trouble with the secondary. You know, we have no questions about Kyle Hamilton, but the other safety, Houston Griffith, I mean, he's a guy we're still waiting 3 years to see him produce. Then, you know, you've got a converted wide receiver at one corner, which is why they're talking to a potential transfer out there who's visiting campus today, as a matter of fact. Nickel has to be figured out. And, you know, and I also, even though Jeremiah Wusu-Koromoa was, you know, he was a Rover, so he's part of the linebackers, but he was a big factor in pass coverage, you know, as opposed to the nickel sometimes. I don't know if that'll be the case with Jack Kaiser, whoever is the Rover this year. So a lot of things to sort out still in the secondary.
All right. Reason number two, the Irish might go 7-5.
Quarterback play. And now I'm confident in what we saw at the Blue-Gold game from Jack Cohn and Drew Pine. I think they'll be fine. But you also still can't overlook the fact they are losing the winningest quarterback in Notre Dame football history. And it has, you know, it's been going on 2 years since Cohn has played. Pine's never played a significant snap. So if they're 7-5, there's going to be some quarterback issues as well.
Well, ESPN Plus's article projects the Irish to go 7-5. If that became reality, what are the top five reasons why such a record would occur? So we are up to the number one reason.
And to me, it's the offensive line. They lost, of course, four starters on the line. Three of them are likely to be starting in the NFL this season. And their only returning starter, Jarrett Patterson. We don't know what position he's going to play yet. And the left side of the line could be a pair of freshmen, you know. So to me, this is the biggest question they have. And it affects the quarterback play that we talked about. It affects the, you know, the play of the running backs, the running game, all those things. And so to me, ultimately, the success of this season rides mostly on this unit.
That is today's My Five Question of the Day. We'll talk Notre Dame recruiting with Mike Singer next on WSBT.
Rapid Fire starts now on Budweiser's weekday sports beat on 96.1 WSBT. Here is Sean Stiers and Darren Pritchett.
Third hour of Budweiser's weekday sports beat on Sports Radio 96.1 WSBT, along with Darren Pritchett. I'm Sean Stiers. We've got the South Bend Cubs, Barnabys of Mishawaka, and Granger pregame show coming up in about 32 minutes here on WSBT right now. Rapid fire question one. Fill in the blank, Darren. We talked yesterday, and actually a little bit last hour, about how ESPN's SP Plus data rankings is predicting Notre Dame football to go 7-5 this season. So it would mean blank if the Irish lose those five games this year.
So I can go any direction with this?
Any direction you want, my friend.
So there's no wrong answer.
That's okay. Exactly right.
All right.
That's why I worded it this way. So you can do whatever you want with it.
If the Irish were to go 7-5 during their football season, our radio station ratings will be extremely high. History shows, I'm not joking,
that's actually true.
When they go 12-0 or they do not live up to expectations and people are all upset, that's when the ratings are highest. If they go 8-4, 9-3, it's like, well, the coach isn't going to get fired and we're not that good. So everybody's just kind of like, eh.
True.
But when the last couple of years going to the playoff, ratings go up. If they're really bad or they struggle, people get upset. They listen. They want to vent their frustrations, yelling at us as we talk about it. So I don't want it to happen that way. I'd rather get the ratings with 12-0. But from a rating standpoint, 7-5 means ratings are going to be pretty good for us next year.
So you're saying 7-5 is radio gold, baby.
That's, just don't go 8-4, 9-3, because it's like, eh, nobody cares.
That's right. That's right. That's a great point. The worse and the better. The better it is.
History shows
it,
too.
Business. Yeah, you're exactly right. You're exactly right. I mean, to me, if Notre Dame goes 7-5, it would mean everything we thought we had learned about Brian Kelly just went out the window. And I would say really everything that we'd learned since they went 4-8 5 years ago. I mean, case in point right there. That's, you know, you're talking about ratings and all that stuff. I mean, he made sweeping changes at the top of his coaching staff after that 4-8 season, and it's resulted in a 43-8 record over the past four seasons since that bottoming out point. And recruiting has gotten better. Now, you know, granted, there's still some areas where they can continue to get better with recruiting, but recruiting has gotten better. Player development has been as good as it's been, and Brian Kelly has shown he's been willing to adapt as well. So, yes, there are questions Notre Dame has to answer this year. That's for sure. But I think that if they would drop that far off after going back to the college football playoff for the second time in 3 years, a second unbeaten regular season in a 3-year stretch down to 7-5, questions or not, you know, I just don't see them going from 8 losses in 4 years to 5 losses in a 1-year season. It just goes against everything that we've learned about and seen from this program since 2016.
Just to go back to the whole ratings thing, I remember in 2012 being shown our November ratings and the streaming numbers as they were trying to get to the championship back then, the BCS, the Final Two. I mean, it was skyrocketing off the chart because Notre Dame fans were shocked. They didn't see this coming, and everybody got all excited, and, man, the ratings were off the chart. And I know 2018 and 2020, some very similar things. When the Irish were in the playoff hunt, November, the ratings just absolutely go off the chart. So, Brian, keep it up. We
Makes
like
sense.
When you do that.
Yes, that's right. We would rather have the 12-0 than the 7-5. I think everyone can agree with that.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, let's shift to some baseball. The Cubs have now taken – well, they swept their series with the Padres with their win this afternoon. So on a scale of 1 to 10, how strongly do you feel this Cubs team is for real, Darren?
So I would assume for real means a playoff team.
Yeah.
Is that a good way to put it?
Yeah, exactly.
Well, I think you factor in a couple of things. A, they're playing great right now. Off the chart good.
Yep.
Their bullpen can't be any better. They're beating really good teams right now. I think you look at St. Louis, they have lost their ace, Jack Flaherty, for at least 8 weeks. So that really helps the Cubs. Milwaukee, their pitching is coming on, but their offense is still hit and miss. So right now the Cubs are the most complete team in the division. I think with Flaherty it might be close, but I think without the ace – I mean, St. Louis is without three of their starting pitchers now due to injury, and they're all long-term.
Yeah.
So that's a big advantage. I can't believe a team with Jake Arrieta and Trevor Williams in the rotation we're going to consider for real. I mean, the ERAs of the starters aren't very good right now, but the bullpen is saving their bacon. The offense has been really good. So I would say 7 right now for the Cubs, and they're being helped out by the other teams in their division, either with some inconsistent offensive play or, in the Cardinals' case, the injuries are really piling up to their pitching staff.
Yeah, and when I look at, like you were talking about, the bullpen compared to the starters, it reminds me – now, I don't think the Cubs are this good. It reminds me a little bit of the 2014 Royals, the team that got to the World Series but lost, just because their bullpen was so dominant, but the starting pitching was just really average, you know, with the exception of Yordano. It kind of reminds me of that, because if the starting pitching can at least keep them in the game into the fifth inning, you hand it over the bullpen, you're feeling pretty good. They've got like a 0.75 ERA over the last month now at this point, the bullpen does. And, you know, and that really has carried them. Now, you do worry about do you overwork the bullpen and all those kind of things, but they'll figure, that's something to be figured out, you know, in July and August. But the one thing about this team, I keep thinking at some point that I'm going to say, okay, well, they had this little hot streak and now they're coming back to earth. But now you look and they sweep the Padres. And even after the Padres were swept, they're still 11 games over 500 right mm-hmm. now. So, you know, so that's a really quality team that the Cubs just beat. Now they've got the West leading Giants coming up, so it's going to be another test. But, you know, again, kind of going back to what you were talking about, when you've got these guys who were, you know, at the developmental site, you know, look at Patrick Wisdom right now and what he's done, 4 home runs in the past week, and I think it's like, what is it, 2 in the last 3 days or something, 3 in the last 4 days or something like that now at this point. But they've won 11 of the last 13, so I think with all the things that you talked about, what else is going on in the Central Division, you know, I don't think they're going to keep up this kind of pace all summer, but I think they're going to be right in there, so I give them a solid 7 in terms of how real they are right now.
Well, one of the hopes for St. Louis right now is it's well known Max Scherzer has wanted to pitch for the Cardinals. He's from Missouri, went to the University of Missouri. He wanted to sign with them when he got the big deal with the Nationals. They didn't even bid on him, which is painful to think about. But the Nationals falling out of the race, he's in the final year of his contract. The Nationals may move him. That would be something that would change the NL Central. You get Flaherty back and you add Scherzer. That's different, but that's a long shot. At this time, I don't know if the Cardinals can stay in it with these 3 starting pitchers now out. It's really going to test their depth at this time, and I'm not sure how they're going to hold up.
Yeah, there are with the other teams in the division, the Cardinals and the Brewers to an extent. I mean, don't even include the Reds and the Pirates in the conversation, but the other 2 teams that should be contenders, there are bigger questions, I think, with them right now than even what the Cubs have with their pitching. And the offense has figured some things out. So, yeah, I think they're going to be in this race to stay for a while.
Mm-hmm.
All right, Patrick Mahomes says he wants to go 20-0, which would mean the Chiefs would go 17-0 in the regular season and 3-0 in the postseason. Here's the quote from Mahomes. Quote, "The only record I have my eyes set on breaking would be going 20-0. Being the first one to do that, that would be awesome," end quote. So, of course, the 72 Dolphins, still the only NFL team to ever go unbeaten in a season. Scale of 1 to 10, what chance do you give any team to ever go 20-0?
I'm going to put it as a 1 because we're coming up on the 50-year anniversary of the Dolphins going undefeated. Yep. One team got close, that's it. So I'll just go ahead and put that in an old number 1, and with a longer season, more injuries, more bumps and bruises, gets a whole lot more difficult.
Yeah, that's exactly right. And that's, I'm the same way. Like, I would put it at a 0, but I guess that I'll at least give it a 1 to give them some kind of chance, because, like you said, it's already been 50 years, and that was a 14-game season. The Patriots were the only team to run the table with a 16-game season. Of course, they got all the way to the Super Bowl and lost to the Giants. They couldn't finish off the deal. And I was thinking about this. Like, last year, even with a 16-game season, the Chiefs rested guys because they had guys, you know, they had lost one game. They rested guys against the Chargers the last week, and they end up losing that game. So, like, if you're playing a 17-game season and you're 16-0, what's the point in playing anyone in that last game, you know? So I don't think that you would risk guys just to say you were 17-0. Maybe you would. I don't know, but it seems like too big a risk to me when you've got bigger things on the line with the playoffs. So I just really, I don't think it'll ever happen again. But like I said, I'm giving it a 1 just on the off chance that somehow it happens. Okay, last question tonight. Fill in the blank. It is blank that Urban Meyer says he might use Tim Tebow in a Taysom Hill-like Wildcat package.
Just want him to do it September 19th in Jacksonville against Denver. Let Tim throw several times. I am all in favor of it. Bring it on. Let's see what happens. So I hope it happens.
I love how – I don't know how long it's been now since these Wildcat packages started popping up, but ever since – teams started doing it, you always hear people saying, oh, you know, talking about these long shot guys to make an NFL team. Well, he'd make a good Wildcat quarterback, that kind of thing. You know, Brandon Winbush got mentioned there a year or two ago. And, you know, now, of course, you've got a former quarterback who hasn't played in the NFL for a decade. I guess if you're Urban Meyer and you're actually entertaining keeping Tim Tebow on your team, you want to find ways to get the most out of him. But I think what's funny, he's a 47% passer in his NFL career, 47%. Taysom Hill is thought of as this running guy. He's 70%. He actually completes a pretty good percentage. So I don't know, maybe the jump pass. Remember like when Tim Tebow was at Florida and he was backing up Chris Leak and he would do like, you know, like I don't know if you'd call it a wildcat, but he was doing the little, you know, fake into the line and then the jump pass for a touchdown and that kind of stuff. I guess maybe that's coming back. I don't know. But Tebow still has a ways to go to get to Taysom Hill level.
Yes. Yes. He's got a long way to go. I think he's going to be tough to bring down. He's a physical,
sure,
tough specimen. But
yeah,
let's see how he runs routes. Let's see how he catches the football. And if he wants to be Taysom Hill, I can't wait to see him throw it. Bring it on. Bring it on. All right, that'll do it for Rapid Fire for today. It is 6:25. Sean and Darren with you. A little more baseball talk coming up. South Bend Cubs baseball on the way. In just about 20 minutes or so on Sports Radio 96.1 WSBT.
This is your home for the South Bend Cubs. Sports Radio 96.1 WSBT.
Twenty-eight minutes in front of the top of the hour, Budweiser's weekday sports beat on your home of the Fighting Irish, Sports Radio 96.1 WSBT. Very interesting sports day. We're going to find out very soon. Mike Krzyzewski is stepping down as Duke basketball coach after this season. That's according to the Associated Press and other media outlets. Nothing official from Duke and Coach K as of yet. But Kevin White, the former Notre Dame AD, is leaving as Duke AD, so there's a transition there.
Right.
And Coach K will be hanging it up after 42 years at Duke and winning over 1,000 games, 5 national championships. So that's a major storyline today of smaller, I guess, consequence in terms of a national story, but something that is interesting. After what happened at the Kentucky Derby with the horse being tested positive that won the race, Bob Baffert, its trainer, has now been suspended by Churchill Downs for 2 years. So it's interesting. I don't know anything about horse racing other than every once in a while back home at the Illinois State Fair. We have one of the fastest dirt tracks, and the harness racing records are broken there. You put down a couple of bucks now and then. That's all I know. But it's really strange. How can you still be the Kentucky Derby winner, but yet the horse tests positive for a drug that's illegal, and now the trainer gets suspended for 2 years. How do you keep your championship? Is this like the Astros?
Great question.
Cheating with the sign-stealing scandal? But, oh, by the way, you did it, but you get to keep your championship, so the end result is you get booed a lot on the road.
Yeah, that's exactly right. I mean, like, you know, Ben Johnson in the Olympics,
yeah,
against Carl Lewis. I mean, he had his gold medal stripped within a couple of days, I think, of testing positive there. But so I don't get it either. I don't get how you get to keep that title. I do remember hearing, like, in the first few days after that, like, that there was kind of a longer process, you know, like to verify, you know, what exactly was in the system and all this different kind. So maybe it has something to do with that. Maybe it could still be stripped. I don't know. But it's a great question.
Maybe you can't blame the horse. It didn't know any better.
Yeah, that's right.
Jose Altuve did know better, but this horse didn't know any better. Okay, so Baffert gets the old 2 years suspension from Churchill Downs. Wild game in the desert this afternoon. After the top of the first inning, it was 5-0 Mets against Arizona. Then the Diamondbacks scored 4 in the bottom of the first. And right now it is 6-6 in the eighth inning, the only other game that's taking place this afternoon in Major League Baseball besides the Cub-Padre game. Now, Phillies, Reds, White Sox, Indians were rained out, but the Cubs today pulled away from San Diego and beat the Padres by a score of 6-1. Albert Alzolay threw to P.J. Higgins today. That was the battery, and they were the battery mates with the South Bend Cubs in 2016. Higgins, I think, was 0-for-12 coming into today and had a base hit late in the ball game for his first Major League base hit, which was awesome to see. But Alzolay has really turned around his career. He just looked like another pitcher in South Bend, to be honest. And they worked on his slider, and he has turned into a different pitcher. 5 innings today, giving up 1 run. He picked up the victory. Anthony Rizzo, the key at bat in the ball game. They brought in Tim Hill, the tough lefty from San Diego, to face Rizzo with 2 on and 2 out, and he roped an opposite field 2 RBI double to put the Cubs in front 3-1. Cubs would score 3 in the seventh, highlighted by a line drive rocket over the left field fence by Javier Baez. It was a 2-run dinger. Cubs led 6-1 at that point, and their bullpen shut the door again. 4 more scoreless innings for the Cubs bullpen. So with that, the Cubs now lead the Cardinals by 1 game for first place in the NL Central. The Brewers are now 3 back. The Brewers are idle today. Meanwhile, the Cardinals wrap up their series in Chavez Ravine against the Dodgers. And again, the news from last night that could be a difference-making storyline, what happens in the NL Central. But the St. Louis Cardinals ace pitcher, Jack Flaherty, 8-1 on the year, went down with an oblique injury. And the reports from the Cardinals say he is out at least 8 weeks, which means that takes you into August. So they don't have their number one and probably their number three starter, Miles Michaelis. He's out again. They have not had Dakota Hudson the whole year due to Tommy John surgery. So right now they're going to be filling in with some guys from the minors with limited experience. And I'm not quite sure how all this is going to pan out for St. Louis. Flaherty's the horse, the anchor of the staff. He goes down with the oblique. And now the Cardinals might be having to really piece things together just to stay in the race. And they still have a lot of games left against the Cubs. They've only played 3 games against Chicago this year. They only have, let's see, 1 series left at home against the Cubs and 3 at Wrigley Field. So the Cubs, with all those games in their back pocket against St. Louis, they can kind of basically end the race right now in the NL Central. They can dominate St. Louis during those games, and a lot of those games take place while Flaherty is going to be out. I don't think they play in September. That's when Flaherty probably comes back. So they may not face Flaherty the whole year. They did not face him in the first series, and with the injury, they may not face him in the entire year, which is a huge advantage. I know the Cardinals have only played the Pirates 5 times, so they've got a bunch of games left against them, but Cubs can really bury St. Louis with all those games coming up at Wrigley Field. And the White Sox were rained out today in Cleveland, so 2.5 game lead over the Indians. And I think after the Royals beat the Pirates last night, Kansas City's only 5 back. They're kind of hanging around. Not sure if they're going to be an adder at the deadline or not, but I would say Kansas City might be a little ahead of schedule at this particular time.
For sure. I mean, they, just with the process that they're in, they still have a lot of young arms, and I think that next year they should be even better. But if they can stay in the race this year, be around 500, a little bit above, I'd be pretty happy with that this season, and then take your chances next year with what could be a pretty competitive race between them and the Sox next year. Just, you know, but yeah, you're right. I think a year ahead of schedule, at least a year ahead of schedule, is a good way to put it.
White Sox, second best record in the American League at 33-22, only trailing the Tampa Bay Rays. Tampa Bay right now is 35-21. They trade their ace, Blake Snell, and it's like they just don't lose anything. They trade their starting shortstop to the Brewers. They keep on going, and they still haven't brought up Wander Franco, who I think went 4-for-5 last night at AAA. I mean, the kid is just destroying the ball at AAA, so that's why they got rid of Adames to the Brewers. That's probably going to be your shortstop here very, very soon. We had him in South Bend for the Midwest League All-Star Game, and we faced him, and I'm telling you what, he's as good as you will see. He will be an immediate impact guy. I think he'll be playing at a high level very, very quickly. I think he's 20 now. That's it, and just is an amazing talent, and I know our coaches, I remember them saying they coached him in the All-Star Game. He was an incredibly grounded kid. He was the guy everybody came to see in the All-Star Game, get his autograph, and he handled it like a 20-year veteran in the majors. Never complained, signed for everybody. So that kid is going to be something special, and the Tampa Bay Rays are going to continue to frustrate the whole world with that little payroll and continuing to drive the Red Sox and the Yankees nuts. Mm-hmm. All right, Sports Beat brought to you by Budweiser, locally distributed by United Beverage Company of South Bend. Baseball fans, this Bud's for you. The Food Bank of Northern Indiana. Hunger is the story we can end. Find out how at feedindiana.org. And Tim Grouse State Farm Insurance. You need life insurance today. Tomorrow will be too late. Protect your family by calling Tim at 232-9981. Tomorrow's program, Brian Driscoll from irishbreakdown.com. We'll talk Notre Dame football recruiting at 525, and we'll play back some of the comments of Notre Dame baseball coach Link Jarrett ahead of Friday's NCAA tournament regional in South Bend as the Irish will take on Central Michigan. Hope you'll join us tomorrow at 4 o'clock for more Budweiser's Weekday Sports Beat. All right, that'll do it. Enjoy the rest of your evening. We'll try it again tomorrow.
Sounds good. Have a good one tonight.
We've got South Bend and Lansing coming up in a couple of moments. Chicago Cubs first-round pick in 2019, Ryan Jensen on the bump for South Bend in a matter of moments on Sports Radio 96.1 WSBT.